This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network. This hour is brought to you by Dash, digital cash. Dash is a cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction and has implemented really cool features to ensure it's undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their chain locks technology. There's no need to wait for confirmation before considering the Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges and in multiple crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at dash.org. And a big thanks to Dash Dow for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org. Number two, this is a weird one because I remember watching the news about this whole Russia-Ukraine war. You know, this Russia, they attacked Ukraine. They're in there doing bad things. Well, I heard from way back in the day when this first started that one of the terrible things that was making them war criminals was that they were using what are called cluster bombs. These are known to have a lot of civilian casualties, all right? One of the reasons is that they tend to have a lot of duds, meaning they don't go off. And one reason you don't want that is because eventually someone could walk up on it.
And it could go off.
And it could go off. And so there are legal limits. I've always thought that was weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to have legal frameworks for war. I've always thought that
that's pretty strange.
These are weird ideas. War crimes is a weird thing to me. It seems like the entire thing would be a crime, but we set a different justice system, I guess.
As long as you fight with honor.
For warring.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, the U.S., it looks like they're going to be giving cluster bombs to Ukraine so they can use them against Russia in Ukraine. Just not going to be great for Ukrainian citizens. It was bad when Russia was using them. Okay for Ukraine to use them, and also it's totally illegal for us to give them to Ukraine for them to use, and we're going to do it. I'm telling you what, Zelensky has got Biden's old crust in a vice. He's got all the tapes, and he's got all the receipts. I'm just telling you.
He can do whatever he wants.
It's the only thing that explains the money and just the blatant breaking of rules all the time. Charles, there's a few things
President
here.
Biden has approved the provision of U.S. cluster munitions with drawdown of the weapons from Defense Department stocks due to be announced Friday. The move, which will bypass U.S. law prohibiting the production, use, or transfer of cluster munitions with a failure rate of more than 1%, comes amid concerns about Kyiv's lagging counteroffense against entrenched Russian troops. And just bypass them. In its last publicly available estimate more than 20 years ago, the Pentagon assessed that artillery shell to have a dud rate of 6%, meaning that at least 4 of each of the 72 submunitions each shell carries would remain unexploded across an area of approximately 22,500 square meters, roughly the size of 4.5 football fields.
Yeah, next part is important because they've got new assessments saying that the dud rate is lower now.
They found on these old
munitions that they haven't made a long time, but they found some new tests that say the dead rate's lower, although it still exceeds the limit.
The Pentagon now says it has new assessments based on testing as recent as 2020 with failure rates no higher than 2.35%. There is no waiver provision in the 1% limit Congress has placed on cluster munition dud rates written into Defense Department appropriations for the last 7 years. Biden would bypass it, and Congress, according to a White House official, drawing down the munitions from existing defense stocks under a rarely used provision of the Foreign Assistance Act, which allows the president to provide aid regardless of appropriations or arms export restrictions, as long as he determines that it is in the vital U.S. national security interest. He just has to say, it's vital to U.S. national security interest.
He can bypass everything as long as giving these to Ukraine is vital to our national security.
Which, of course, it is.
Very much so. Because
I think it's vital to Biden's security interests.
Which would, if Biden falls, we all fall. Okay? And we've all fallen a bunch of times upstairs.
Yeah.
You know.
Or off bicycles.
Yeah. One quote here from someone who, they say more than 120 countries have joined the convention banning their use as inhumane and indiscriminate. Like I said, when the war first started, there were like these reports that Russia was maybe using these cluster munitions. It was a big deal. People were talking about it and war crimes and breaking rules and all that. And they were like, yeah, we're just going to give it to Ukraine. That's fine.
We're going to do the same thing.
What? You hate democracy? Mm-hmm. Fascist?
Yep.
Come on. We got to save the Nazis. This person says it's dismaying to see the long-established 1% unexploded ordnance standard for the cluster munitions rolled back, as this will result in more duds, which means even greater threat to civilians, including D-miners. The lack of transparency on how this number was reached is disappointing and seems unprecedented.
They can't release it. You have to have a security clearance.
There's a test right here. We just found it. It's got a lower, number now, all of a sudden, because they need it. I wanted to talk about this ridiculous thing. This is actually going to be the main topic because I like economics and government waste. And so this actually is a piece here from the WAPO. Charles, if you want to start, but we're about to get internets all over the country. Now, I got a personal stake in this because my family, who lives in what would be classified as out in the middle of nowhere, did not get high-speed internet until they went from, they had a Verizon hotspot for a bit, but it had a limit on it, like no streaming platforms at the house or whatever. That just wasn't a thing. They didn't get internet until
Netflix and chill.
I don't know, maybe a year ago, tops is when they got it. And they got Starlink. That's how they got internet.
Mm.
And so I understand what it is like for people that are out there in these areas where there are no internet options.
I don't get it.
You wouldn't understand. You grew up rich, white, privileged, always had all of the things.
Yeah.
You've got like 150 gig speed internet over here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So our voices get there before we even say it.
That's
when we're
right.
talking to people.
Well, President Biden on Monday announced more than $42 billion in new federal funding to expand high-speed internet access nationwide, commencing the largest ever campaign to help an estimated 8.5 million families and small businesses finally take advantage of modern-day connectivity.
Mm.
The money, which the government plans to parcel out to states over the next 2 years, is the centerpiece of a vast and ambitious effort to deliver reliable broadband to the entire country by 2030. Ensuring that even the most far-flung parts of the United States can reap the economic benefits of the digital age.
Now, this is a big, just to clarify, we're not like anti-internet for people. We're not saying it's a dumb thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah, internet's a good thing.
There are a lot of great jobs. In fact, some of the best, the most high-paying jobs are work-from-home type jobs. That's something that a lot of people around the country don't have any access to. Now, they can move to a place to be able to have that job if they wanted to, or the internet's going to help. And they haven't been able to get as misinformed as other people, and now it's going to be easier for them to get misinformed
right.
on things. And they haven't been woke preached to by Netflix enough, and so they're going to be able to get that too.
How many, or how much of that $42 billion do you think will actually go to expanding broadband access? And is it only going to cost $42 billion?
It will not only cost $42 billion. Even the expansions, which we'll go through here in a minute, the expansions that the internet companies already did in 2020 totaled $86 billion for them expanding their lines because we went into pandemic type situation. And so for the government to say that they're going to fully cover the rest of the country with $42 billion, I bet it gets a quarter, potentially. And even at that price, Charles, that's $5,000 per family to connect them to the internet.
Mm.
Not even counting what the monthly bills and all that are going to be.
Tito says, well, first take 10% of that for the big guy.
Yeah, that's one of the issues. You've always got big guy taking that money out.
That's right. Even in a time of self-driving cars, commercial spaceflight, and artificial intelligence, roughly 7% of the United States still does not have broadband service that meets the government's minimum standards, according to new federal estimates. It's the biggest investment in high-speed internet ever, because for today's economy to work for everyone, internet access is just as important as electricity or water or other basic services. I think Maslow talked about this on his hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. Food, water, shelter, broadband.
Broadband. You have to have access. And it's got to meet the minimum standards. Like, it's got to be 25 down, 3 up.
Well, that was an asterisk. I didn't feel the need to.
You got
to
have that. Mm. It's not as important as water. Can we just... No, it's not as important as water.
Do you think Flint has broadband, but not water still?
Can we do broadband instead of water? Flint, I don't like water all that much.
Does Flint have water yet? I mean, do we know?
The correct answer is who cares?
Okay.
Apparently.
Well, as long as they get internet. The president's announcement marks only the beginning of a long and difficult journey, which will largely states chart a course for how and where to deploy new speedy internet.
That must have been a direct quote.
And the success or failure of Biden's new campaign hinges on factors that have bedeviled his predecessors, including the steep price tag and complicated nature of a broadband build-out, as well as lingering gaps in the government's understanding of who needs connectivity.
Even in the WAPO article.
We don't even know what we're doing, but we're going to announce it.
We don't even fully understand where this needs to go. It's really hard to gauge because...
This is the problem with the government trying to solve problems, okay? Yeah. Because they don't even know where the problems are, but they're just going to fork over your money and tell you that they're going to virtuously solve this problem for these poor people who don't have broadband.
Other than working from home, almost everyone has got a cell phone that's going to have the speed that they're talking about. And we're not even getting into what the real solution to this problem would be if you wanted to solve it. But
and in 20 years, are we even going to need to lay internet lines?
No, we don't need to do it now. By the time they finish this, it's going to be obsolete. They probably haven't finished installing fax machines in everyone's buildings yet.
They're still working on fax machines. I still haven't received my government-approved beeper.
I know. Yeah. It'd take forever on those things.
Can't get a SIG in here, you know? For decades, the U.S. government has spent billions of dollars annually to deploy speedy internet service nationwide, only to struggle to ensure those sums benefit the communities that need it most. The federal campaign took on new energy and importance during the coronavirus pandemic, which demonstrated how the internet had become essential for daily life. Remember this virus that shut everything down?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The internet was essential when the government locks you down. And I wonder, maybe there are... building the internet lines for future harder lockdowns right now. In some of these places, like what I was talking about where my family's from, where kids were trying to, during the pandemic, where they were trying to learn from home, do schooling from home, in areas like where my family's from, you can't do that. They can't learn from home. They don't have internet. So there's no library for them to go to or a McDonald's for them to go to. And so they couldn't fully lock everyone down. Or if they did, they get a lot of learning loss with these kids, which I doubt they worry about that.
Just listen to these names, by the way. So the investments include $42.5 billion for the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, known as BEAD.
BEAD.
Which Congress enacted as part of a sprawling 2021 law to improve the nation's infrastructure. Mark Vasconi, the director and the top... of the top broadband office in Washington State. What a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Hey, what do you do? Well, I'm the director.
He's not even at one of the lower broadband offices. Mm-hmm. He's at
the top
broadband office. Mm-hmm.
He said there's 239,000 locations in his state that still don't have service. Well, yeah. Most people don't live on top of mountains, Mark. To deliver quality fiber internet everywhere, Vasconi predicted could cost as much as $3 billion. More than the $1.2 billion the state ultimately received Monday, but he said in advance of the award that the remainder could be covered by state and private investment. So Nate did the math for everyone.
That's $12,500 per location that gets internet. $12,500. And here's the main problem. The very first thing that popped up in my mind was the first thing that also popped up in Thomas Massey's mind as well, that Starlink, it would be $600.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we're talking, now, before we get into all the issues with Starlink, the $42 billion for 8.5 million families is $4,941 per family. Now, that's to get the internet to their house. And maybe there's a little bit of money in there for subsidizing bills, but probably not for very long. Plus, it's going to cost way more money than that, and they're going to get to way less houses. It's going to cost five times as much money, and they're going to get to 2 million homes, not 8.5. That's what's actually going to happen. And so like this one...
Well, they don't even know where the 8.5 million are.
No. When you drill down to just Washington State and you go to this Mark Vasconi, he says, we got 239,000 locations and we think it's going to cost $3 billion. Now, they gave him less than half of that amount that they say is going to make it to the locations in Washington State to get internet to them. So we're already shortchanged here, and you're talking about a guy who's got a closer, better representation of the people in his state that need this and how much he thinks it's going to cost for this to happen. And he's projecting $12,500 per location. And Starlink is $600 once you buy the terminal and I believe whatever the startup fee is or whatever. And then you got to pay, of course, the monthly price. It would still be cheaper for people, for the government, to pay people's Starlink bill for 10 years, actually, for just pay the whole thing for 10 years for them. And it would come out to what this is going to cost here in Washington State, and they could do it way faster. Now, Starlink, the problem with that is that they don't have all the satellites up, and so they don't have the continuous perfect coverage everywhere.
Yet.
Yet, around the U.S. And when a lot of people are using it, it can get bogged down. Okay, so that's the thing with Starlink right now, but over the next couple of years, it's just going to get better. They keep launching more and more satellites up there all the time. And that this is just a great example of what the government does to try and solve a problem that they decided they need to solve, and how the market itself is actually solving the problem much better, much more efficient, much cheaper, and we're going to ignore that. The side problem is that you still couldn't even do this regardless, because if the government announced that they were going to buy a Starlink terminal for 8.5 million people, right now, if they are willing to pay $5,000 per family to get internet to 8.5 million people, then the cost of a Starlink terminal will go up to roughly $5,000.
It's weird how that happens.
And that is what happens when the government decides to fund things. And so you wouldn't even be able to do it at the price that the Starlink is right now. Now, not that they would do that, because there's still a lot of people that are going to buy it outside. They wouldn't be able to, but maybe you can get the government to subsidize it, or you get like Starlink insurance. They'll just cover it when people want to buy Starlink, you know. You want to get internet insurance, you know, just force insurance companies to cover that too.
Yeah.
It's a precondition, not having insurance, not having internet.
This is Biden care.
Yeah. It's important.
Yeah.
Okay. So economics is much more difficult. And if they decided they were going to provide Starlink to everyone, the price of Starlink would jump up quite a bit. The reason that they're probably doing this is because a lot of these companies, a lot of union companies, they're going to be digging all the lines for all this fiber. And those are the people that have been greasing the wheels heavily for the people that voted for this bill.
Of hunters, hookers.
And so you've got a decade of work that doesn't even have to get finished. We know it's not going to get internet to 8.5 million families, and we know it's going to cost five times more than what they're projecting right now, and it's going to take more time. They're saying by 2030. It's not going to happen. Okay?
Never has.
But what is going to happen is yearly, all of these companies with a whole bunch of union jobs digging holes are just going to get money shoveled over to them, digging lines to nowhere for years at a time.
What if you, like, dig a line to a house, but then those people move out? At least the house has it.
What do you do if you dig the line and you move on to the next place, and then another person moves over here down the street? Like, how long do they have to wait to get the line brought over here? You know?
What if I build a cabin in the middle of the woods, and I really want, I need broadband out there, and they won't come to my cabin?
What It'd be an interesting experiment to see if they would be forced to provide, like, find the most remote location in the United States, an area most known for its remoteness.
Which you wouldn't know about.
No, we don't know about it.
Yeah.
So find that location. I want someone, all you billionaires listening right now, I want you to put a freaking house in that area right there. Complain that you can't get broadband service and see if the government spends $150,000, $200,000, $500,000 to pay people to run a fiber line all the way out to your house. Because we need it.
Come on, man.
I've been wondering, like, what is wrong? What happened? You know, is this even fixable? Can we possibly win this? And I've been trying to figure out what it is, and I think it's the moral high ground has been ceded. But, and one thing, listen, I sent you that video of Jordan Peterson talking at the, was it the Dave Ramsey's thing or what?
Dave Ramsey interview, yeah.
He made Ayn Rand's case for what was wrong with conservatives. When we talk about capitalism and markets, we tend to make the argument that it works better. As if socialism worked better, it would be fine to enslave each other to each other. That's not the case.
It's a bad argument.
The argument is that it is the only moral system, and socialism, all the other isms, are immoral. And then you build on from there. It's great that it happens to also work better than everything else. What a coincidence. That's weird. But since we don't make that argument, that this is the moral system, that it's great to be wealthy as long as you earned it justly, you didn't steal from people. You know, even so, we've stopped making that argument, and people have been, well, we haven't, and people have been afraid to make that argument. And said, well, look at graphs and figures and look at how much better this has worked than this. And what that does is it leaves it open for people to say, well, if we just get the right people in, they can organize the economy a little bit better. You see, in this country with a population half the size of New York City, they did a great job. And so that's what we should do. And you skirt away from the moral argument, which is that people own themselves, that you don't own other people, and it's not right to force them to do things. It's not right to force them to work and then take their money, whatever percentage you vote to take away from them. It's just not moral to do. And so whatever other arguments you make are dead to me. They're dead to me. All right, y'all. Hope you enjoyed those discussions. Now, coming up, we're going to be talking about climate change, a deep dive into some misleading reporting I've seen over the last little bit. And then we're going to talk about RFK Jr., some of his ideas on vaccines. We are not scientists, but I do want to talk about some of the things we've heard him say. And then this hit piece from Reason magazine, or this video, is it a hit piece? Are they right? I don't know. You decide. Let's talk about it. We'll do that right after the break.
We all have heard about the benefits of fish oils, but what about the presence of heavy metals, PCBs, dioxins, furans, and other contaminants found in fatty tissues of fish? GCNteam.com recognizes this risk and offers IFOS certified tested omega-3 fatty acids. EPA, DHA insist on IFOS omega-3 fatty acid certification. Get the best at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
USA News Update. Bank of America has been ordered to pay customers more than $100 million. Tony Waterman says federal regulators found the bank double-dipped on fees, withheld credit card rewards, and opened accounts without customer permission.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau said Bank of America harmed hundreds of thousands of customers over a several-year period, charging clients tens of millions of dollars in repeated fees and withholding promised cash and reward points. Workers at the bank are also also accused of illegally applying for and enrolling customers in credit card accounts without consent so they could meet their sales goals. Bank of America must also pay $150 million in penalties and fines.
The NFL looks to be more popular than ever. Forbes reports the league brought in a record $11.9 billion in revenue last year. I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCNteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer, can communicate information, and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Hey y'all, Jeff Foxworthy here. Now if you've ever found yourself repeating the same thing over and over for 75 years, you might be Smokey Bear.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
That's why I'm filling in for Smokey to switch things up, because there's a lot more to say. And I should know, because my grandfather was a firefighter. And one of the things he taught me is that the people that love the outdoors the most are often the ones accidentally starting wildfires. Which means, always BYOB. No, bring your own bucket to the campfire. And be extra careful with things like burning yard trimmings. Don't just walk away, or chances are, you might be starting a wildfire. So for the love of the outdoors, go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at FreeTalkLive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
What's up, y'all? This is Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie. I'm Nate Thurston, and we're back. About to talk about some climate change. I'm hanging out with the Fed Haters Club, who's part of the Good Morning Liberty Fed Haters Club. Good Morning Liberty is the podcast that Charlie and I do every single day of the week when we want to. So if you like some of the content that you've been hearing, then go check that out on your favorite podcast app and all of the social medias and everything. Do that as well. But by going to joingmail.com, these people have been hanging out with me in the Fed Haters Club as I talk about some of these subjects, or as we talk about some of these subjects. Charlie's not here right now as I record some of these intros or even this specific segment, but it's not his fault. He's traveling. That's okay. I was combing through the internets today to see if I could figure out what I was going to talk about, and let me tell you what. First off, it wasn't that easy, because all I can tell from the big news organizations I go to is that we're all about to die from climate change. That's a fact, but it's not a debate. There's no time to talk about it because we're all about to die. For instance, like the front of the Washington Post, their page today, it just says historic deadly New England floods trap residents. And you go down here to the bottom and it says Florida ocean temperatures at, quote, downright shocking levels. We've got Canada seeing its farthest north 100 degree temperature. We've got a sprawling dome of heat that's engulfing most of southern U.S. It's all just a bunch of climate change fear porn. And that's fine if that's the kind of thing that gets you going in the morning. You know, that's fine. It keeps going down here at the bottom. Places in the U.S. most at risk for extreme rainfall. What extreme heat does to the human body. Where extreme heat will pose the biggest threat. It just keeps going. Even the New York Times as well
front page right here. Don't pay attention to this other weird thing that's going on the top right. I'm not exactly sure what that is. But residents rescued with the torrential rainfall in New England. Dangerous heat engulfs western U.S. More than 61,000 people died from heat waves across Europe last summer. And we'll be talking about that one specifically because it kind of made me a little bit upset. Now, I will say a little bit of my climate change disclaimer. I'm not what you'd call a climate denier because I don't know what the heck that actually is. Is it possible that we could unnaturally upset the balance of carbon in the atmosphere by pumping CO2 into the atmosphere at a fast enough pace? It's possible. If we did that, would we be able to change weather patterns? It's possible, okay? Is that exactly what's happening right now? Can you blame this rainfall on climate change? Can you blame this heat wave on climate change? No, not really. You can't blame any single event on climate change. That's just what I believe, okay? Should we have cleaner energy? I think that if we can, if it's affordable, if it's efficient, I think that's good. I do not think that solar panels or wind are the answer for this energy. I think nuclear and natural gas are the answer for this cleaner energy. I know that natural gas is still a fossil fuel. I get it, but it is much cleaner than coal and burning wood and all that stuff that people are moving to after they close down their nuclear plants. Okay, so I think we should move to those things. The problem when you say, all right, oh, maybe the climate is changing, maybe better if we could have cleaner energy. None of the plans we have right now are going to solve this problem. They're not even projected to solve this problem. And they'll end up hurting more people than they're apparently trying to save in the first place. When we look at climate change, when we talk about it, when we talk about the green movement, we have to ask what the goal is. What is it that people like Biden or John Kerry or anyone else, what are they trying to solve? My guess would be that they would answer that they want to save human lives, that they want to save people. Well, in that case, Greta Thunberg, yeah, that's another person. You know, what are you doing? Why do you want to do this? Why is this such a big problem? I think they would answer that they want to save people's lives, that people are going to die because of this. And if that is the case, then any time we consider some type of policy or law, we would need to see if more people would die as a result of that, or if it would actually save lives in doing so. For instance, taking down the world's economy or preventing third world countries in Africa from rising up like we did by having cheap energy. How many people die in Africa because of curable diseases, because they don't have clean enough water, they don't have electricity in areas? How many people die because of that? If we stop them from getting clean, or if we stop them from getting efficient and affordable energy, are we actually saving lives in the process? We probably are not. We're probably expending their lives to maybe save some lives in some richer, wealthier countries. But maybe not even that. It's all very complicated. It's not just as easy as we're not going to use coal and burn wood or use oil or any kind of fossil fuels anymore. It's not that easy. One of these stories here from the Washington Post, just a quick example of how they like to pull a fast one on you with their headlines. All those headlines I've seen have been very scary headlines. You read those things every day, you're going to start to get worried, you know. Maybe we do need to have higher taxes on the fossil fuel companies, or maybe we do need to put more of other people's money into solar panels and wind farms. Not my money. It's always someone else's money that goes into that. For instance, this one, historic, deadly New England floods trap residents and destroy roads. Now, as we've had a couple weeks of breaking records, world records, historic records, hottest in history, all of those that we've seen. I believe July 4th was a day where we were seeing that. The world average world temperature, hottest ever recorded, goes back to 1979. By the way, when it comes to the average temperature around the globe, which means nothing. We know that. But when they say historic, deadly New England floods, I'm like, okay, what year? What are we going back to? You know, how are we going to do this? I'm not sure about Canada, Jeff. I think we pulled the plug on them. I think they all burned up. I haven't been hearing anything about them, and I'm not seeing a lot of smoke anymore these days, or at least I'm not seeing a bunch of pictures of it. So, mission accomplished, in my view. Kidding, of course, about that. Historic deadly New England floods trap residents. Now, the historic part of this, just to let you know, it goes back to 2021 and 2011. Those are the dates. Those are historic dates that they go back to. And they didn't beat those dates, by the way, because if they did, they would have used the earlier years. Okay? So the historic levels, first off, 2021 and maybe 2011 that we have so far. And those are the only dates mentioned in this Washington Post article. But they're able to put the word historic in the title of it, which leads you to believe what? That we've broken all of the records, right? It didn't even break 2021 or 2011. Just want to point that out. You got always got to look. In this case, it was only in the second paragraph. That's all it was. I want to get on to this interesting article because the experts, they're at it right now. And experts are speculating. So we got very scientific analysis happening right now. They are experts and they are speculating that climate change is increasing kidney stone cases in kids. And so here's the report from the experts that we have. Experts are speculating that climate change and other factors are driving the increase in kidney stone cases among children and teens. Experts told NBC News that just three decades ago, kidney stones were largely a disease that affected middle-aged white men. But they now increasingly affect children and teens, especially in the summer. Okay. The number of annual kidney stone cases increased by 16% from 1997 to 2012. But in kids, well, 15 to 19-year-olds, that went up 52% higher among females in that age bracket. We'll just keep drilling this down. Kidney stones among children doubled from 1997 to 2012, according to the study, while black children and adults suffered kidney stones at a higher rate than their white peers. That is because of kidney racism, of course, but we all learned that in school already. Doctors have not determined exactly what's driving the increase among youth, but speculated that climate change, a diet of ultra-processed foods, and the increased use of antibiotics among children are causing dehydration, according to NBC News. So they are actually speculating that it's dehydration. And they are able to add climate change into this, which is adding to the dehydration. Of course, it has to be climate change. It can't be, as someone, as Bailey said, the Monster energy drinks. It can't be substituting some kind of a crappy juice for water. Of course, not like cranberry juice, which can help with that stuff. Just soft drinks instead of water. Or maybe you got to put something in your water all the time. Or maybe there's more crap on our food. Or maybe there's even aging pipes that are bringing us our water, and the water's not as good either. And we're getting more kidney stones. No, it's actually climate change. It's this 0.7 degree increase average in temperature that is causing a doubling of kidney stones in children because kids play outside at the same rates that they used to. No, kids actually play outside way less than they used to, which makes this argument extremely weird to me because they're spending less time outside, which is where you get the outside temperatures, which is what would matter for climate change and causing dehydration. Now let's look into that just a little bit. By the way, the expert that they talked to says that they focused on the relationship between temperature and kidney stone presentations for a decade. The summary is that hot days increase the frequency of kidney stone events. The risk of these events is higher among males than females and better predicted. I'm talking about heat metrics there. But while it's unlikely that climate change has been a significant contributor to the increase in kidney stones among children and adults over the last 20 years, it is likely that climate change will increase the number of people affected by stones in the future. So even though they've had a doubling of kidney stones in young children over the last 20 years, they say that it's unlikely that climate change has been a significant contributor, but it's likely that it will be a significant contributor into the future, just not this time, that it's doubled over this period of time. If y'all can make sense of that, that's totally fine. The other thing that I did find is that kids are spending way less time outside, which makes this argument really weird to me. American children, let's see, 65% of parents surveyed said that they played outside every day during their childhood, while only 30% of their children do the same. 65% of parents surveyed said they played outside, and only 30% of those people said that their children do the same thing now every day. I found plenty of numbers, and it seems like the rates of kids just playing outside have gone down quite a bit. All right. Clearly, video games, maybe crime, I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is. You know, these days you could end up getting your kids taken away if you do what back in my day, what we were able to do, or back in our parents' days, you know, riding your bike across town to pick something up, or just spending all day outside by yourself riding a little. Do people do that still? Do you just get on your bike and you just go to the other side of town when you're like 10 years old? Is that a thing? Maybe 12. Okay, maybe 12. Does anyone know any kids that still do that? I don't think that's a thing anymore. It definitely used to be a thing when I was growing up. We were outside all the time. Gives me a good opportunity to say kids these days, you know? It's those gosh darn video games and their Netflix and it's their cell phones. It's their cell phones. That's what it is. All right. And that's the problem that we have. Now brings me to one that really grinds my gears, or really gets my gears a grinding. And it was this article from the New York Times. And it says the summer heat waves killed 61,000 in Europe last year. Study says 61,000 people killed in the heat waves in Europe last year. That's a lot of people, okay? I don't like that. I don't like that those people died, and neither did the people in the New York Times. And when people see these numbers, well, what do you think? I mean, that's got to be some kind of a record, of course. Maybe it is a record. Is it a record on a percentage basis because our populations have increased quite a bit? No, it's not a record on a percentage basis, of course, because we're getting better and better with shelter and air conditioning. Clearly, 100 years ago, a higher percentage of the population would have died even if the temperature was a degree lower. All right, 61,000 people died, though. We've got to stop this. You know what we have to do? We have to stop the Earth from getting any warmer. That way we save people's lives. Because remember, what we talked about at the beginning was, what's the point of all this, if not to save people's lives and give people more fulfilling, easy, meaningful life? I don't know. Well, then we need to save their lives. More than 61,000 people died. This is from the New York Times because of last year's brutal summer heat waves across Europe, according to a study published on Monday in the journal Nature Medicine. The findings suggest that two decades of efforts in Europe to adapt to a hotter world have failed to keep up with the pace of global warming. Here's a quote. In an ideal society, nobody should die because of heat, said Joan Ballester, a research professor at the Barcelona Institute for Global Health and the study's lead author. In an ideal society, nobody should die because of heat. Okay, I'll bite. Sure, in an ideal society, there will be no deaths because of heat. There will be no deaths, actually, and we will lay there, and things will appear in front of us, and we will just live glorious lives, never moving or never having to go outside or never do anything, really, and everything will just be so perfect, and there will be no death, and there will be no pain, and there will be no suffering, said Joan Ballester. That was not a full quote there. This summer is likely to be even worse. On top of climate change, the Earth has entered a natural El Nino weather pattern during summer for the first time in 4 years. bringing about conditions that will turn up the heat in many parts of the world. This season is shattering various global temperature records. Extreme heat had been expected that summer based on, so we're going to look at the year 2003. That's what they were comparing. Now, they had a lot of deaths in 2003, and they decided they were going to adapt to this. That's why they said two decades trying to adapt to this problem. Did they do it? Did it get better? They say no, and then later they're going to say yes. I want to bring up something that is very annoying to start off. Here's the journal. There's Nature Medicine. You see over here on the right, this is the risk of death. This risk of death to the right as the temperature increases. Here is the risk over here, much higher as the temperature decreases. As the temperature goes down, you will see that the risk of death actually goes up higher than the risk of death when the temperature is going higher. Okay? But to continue, as climate change continues, the world can expect more and more deaths from extreme heat, Dr. Ballister added. This is where I start to get kind of frustrated reading this, because as I'm reading this, and as I read the entire study today, the entire, you know, summary of the study, they don't talk about deaths from cold ever. And this doctor keeps saying that we can expect more and more deaths from extreme heat. Okay, yeah, as it gets hotter, we can expect more deaths from extreme heat. Congratulations. What is the goal? Is the goal for less people to die or more people to die? I'm not arguing in favor of climate change, okay? I'm not voting for climate change here. But if we're trying to save people's lives, this is one that doesn't work out for you. Because way more people die from the cold. Let me continue in the article before we go through these numbers. Dr. Ballister and his colleagues took the official reports of total excess mortality from June through August 2022 and estimated how many of those deaths could be attributed to heat instead of other unusual factors like the coronavirus. Just to clarify one more time, they looked at excess mortality and they estimated how many of those deaths could be attributed to heat. They didn't look up deaths that were specifically notated because of heat or whatever. They picked a number. So that's cool. They used epidemiological models, meaning they matched recent historical temperature trends in different regions of Europe with mortality trends over the same period to establish numerical relationships between deaths and temperature swings. That is how they were able to estimate this. They keep talking over and over again about how more and more people are going to die because of the extreme heat. I want to show you these numbers. In The Lancet, this study was published in July 2021. It covers the year 2000 to 2019. So over a large amount of time, we've got. Once again, what is the goal of this green movement? Is it to save people's lives? I get sick of the talk about the extreme heat because of this right here. From the year 2000 to 2019, in the areas that they observed, they did not look at every single country. They didn't just make estimations. They looked at actual records, but they didn't look at every single country. Globally, they have 5,083,000 excess deaths due to temperature swings, okay, either too hot or too cold. They got 5 million deaths globally. 4,594,000 of those are from cold-related deaths, and 489,000 of those are from heat globally. If we look in North America, we've got 171,000 related to cold and 20,000 related to heat. If you look in Europe, you've got 657,000 related to cold and 178,000 related to heat. Now remember, they did not look at every single country. This was, I believe, in 18 countries over that period of time. So just to clarify these numbers a little bit better for you. Globally, they have 8.52% of these excess deaths were cold-related, 0.91% were heat-related. All right? Or if you look at that per 100,000, you got 67 people per 100,000 that died from cold and 7 per 100,000 that died from heat. When you look at Europe, you got 89 per 100,000 that died from cold and 24 per 100,000 that died from heat. And so we go through this whole study in the Journal of Medicine here, and they don't talk about cold-related deaths whatsoever. Now, they don't have to talk about cold-related deaths because this study specifically was heat-related mortality in Europe during the summer of 2022. I would like to ask a question. Why didn't they say temperature-related mortality in Europe during the summer of 2022? My guess is that because likely they would find that temperature-related mortality probably went down. Heat might have gone up, but cold probably went down. And since cold is such a larger portion of those deaths, they would actually end up with a smaller number, which is why they only looked at heat-related mortality. So when you see people hitting the panic button about heat-related deaths, you want to ask them, okay, well, how many people die from cold? That's a question. Just a question. Let's answer it. What's your goal? You don't want people to die. Okay, you're trying to save people's lives. Well, actually, this one, from temperature-related deaths, works out in everyone's favor when it gets warmer. So maybe we should just stop using this one to put people in panic mode. All right, folks, when we get back, we're finally going to get into our talk on RFK Jr., some of his ideas on vaccines. We get a little segment on the hate speech law in Ireland and how ridiculous that is, and some of this controversy that has been sparked between Reason Magazine and RFK Jr. and some of the other people in the Libertarian Party. And they're very, very upset about what Reason had to say about RFK. So we'll talk about all that when we get back.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.